And good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host today is Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It is Friday, August 21st, 2020. Good afternoon, Dave.
TGIF Melody.
It is, and I'm looking forward to this one, you know, believe it or not, but I am, and gold, I think, was kind of looking forward to the weekend, too. It couldn't decide what it wanted to do, but still not a bad day for gold. It was only down 590, 1941. Silver was down 49 cents at 26.83. Platinum was up 5 at 929. Palladium was down 6 at 2,222. The USDX was up 0.50 at 93.24. And again, you know, it's a lot about that dollar, ladies and gentlemen. You know, they weren't going to let it go. They weren't going to let it go into free fall. They had to stem the losses. They had to bring it back. They had treasury auctions, and it all gave the dollar some strength. So there was a little bit of pressure on gold with some other things going on. But for the most part, that's how you can follow it. And it is what it is, and we're going to see that going forward. Does it change anything? No, it doesn't. Absolutely, it does not. Crude oil was down 57 cents at 42.25, and the paper markets today, the Dow was up 190 at 27,930. The NASDAQ was up 46 at 11,311. The S&P was also up 11 at 3,397. 10-year yield 0.64%. And let's see. Germany was down, London was down, same old there. You know, tech's magnificent 7 are worth $7.7 trillion. Amazing. Absolutely amazing. But hey, nobody really knows what $1 trillion is anyway, and worthless dollars. So I'd like to know what that would be worth from the 50s. What that value would, you know, would be.
What
it would
what
be
value?
In the 7.7 trillion. That's a
seven.
Yeah. So anyway, let's see. What do we got going on today? This isn't you know, hey. Everybody thinks there's going to be a jobless tsunami, you know, possibly. The exponential growth of claims for the Emergency Unemployment Compensation Program is kind of worrying everybody, maybe some anyway. And, you know, we saw that the pandemic program was part of the CARES Act, provided the benefits. It's been exhausted. The program has grown from 27,000 people on April 11th to 1.3 million as of August 1st. Dave, you'd think that number is supposed to be going down.
You'd think.
You'd think. So the number of pandemic program recipients has been over 1 million for 4 straight weeks, and each week it increases. It's supposed to be going down from what we're being told. Worse, it's likely made up of people who lost their jobs before the wave of business closures that hit the U.S. in mid-March. And, of course, that is then kind of makes a little bit of sense if we were in a recession in February, Dave.
It does. And just a quick aside before I continue, 7.7 trillion today would have been worth $796 billion in 1955.
Really? That's still a lot.
Yeah. But that's, you know, 10%, roughly 10% of what a dollar is worth today. In any event, our good friend Mark Zandi, who we quote a lot, he's chief economist at Moody's Analytics. He's a mainstreamer, but he has some interesting insights that are worth talking about. He says, That leaves us with little job creation in the rest of the economy, but with still high levels of layoffs. He believes that the labor market is set to start weakening again, particularly if Congress and the administration don't pass more stimulus. Julia Coronado, who's the president of Macro Policy Perspectives, adds it's becoming a longer tail of recovery with more labor market friction. You're starting to see unemployment spells last a long time. And the longer you're out of the labor force and disconnected from your prior employer, the harder it is to reconnect. And that could mean a lot more out-of-work Americans could become chronically unemployed, creating a problematic long-term jobless problem for an already struggling nation. Coronado added the recovery would be faster and more robust with another round of stimulus, and without it, there's a lot more risk of a protracted, slower recovery and even some backtracking.
We know there's some leading economic indicators. They're increasing at a far slower pace. The Conference Board's index, it didn't increase for the third straight month, but still at a far slower pace than the previous 2 months. So, I mean, you can look at these recent gains in the index, which, you know, remain fairly broad-based. The initial post-pandemic recovery appears, you know, to be losing steam. And this is what we told you. So you had that knee-jerk recovery because you just had businesses opening up. But these are not new jobs being created. There's jobs that businesses are just trying to reopen. Now, as far as the recovery appearing to lose steam, that's according to Ozelderum. Adaman. Should be Attaboy, but Adaman.
Mm-hmm.
Ozelderum, Senior Director of Economic Research at the Conference Board. The index suggests that the pace of economic growth is going to weaken substantially for the end of this year, Dave.
Well, there are 10 components of the leading economic indicators for the U.S., and they are average weekly hours in manufacturing, average weekly initial claims for unemployment insurance, talk about that every week, manufacturers' new orders, consumer goods and materials, the ISM index of new orders, manufacturers' new orders of the non-defense capital goods, building permits, in new private housing units, stock prices, the leading credit index, interest rate spread, and average consumer expectations for business conditions.
You know, it's funny. Everybody seems to be perplexed about this disconnect from the, you know, paper markets. I mean, they're all at a near all-time high. But yet everybody thinks that the world still seems to be falling apart. And again, it's, I don't know why they would be perplexed. I mean, there are a number of any looming threats that could bring this rally in equities to a screeching halt. It's going to come to a screeching halt anyway. You know, I mean, we certainly have a lot going on this year. I mean, you can look at the, you know, school reopenings, the uncertainty, the elections, tensions with China, although I think a lot of that is just, I don't think there are any real, I don't know, Dave, when it comes to tensions with China. You know, you hear a lot of hot air being blown, but everybody knows where their bread is buttered. And of course, you know, one of them also could be, you know, the inflation, monetary inflation. You know, we've seen what the paper markets do, but yet we continue to see all the problems that face this nation. There's a huge disconnect between the fundamentals and markets. But you got the Federal Reserve that is what's behind it, not just during this recession, but every recession we've had in the past, mainly the Great Recession of 2008. So there's just too much capital chasing investments. The Fed is flooding markets, and it's not good. It's not going to be a real economy or a good economy, Dave.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, I don't ever remember a time in our lifetime, Melody, where there's where the paper markets and the real economy have been connected in a pure correlation sense.
It's
It
true.
just so happens that today the disconnect is so wide that it does boggle the mind. And your comment about why is everyone so perplexed
Yeah,
is a
we're
good
not.
question. Yeah, I
We're
know,
not.
because it's like, it makes you scratch your head and really?
But let me say this, Dave. I don't think many of them are perplexed. I think they know exactly what's going on and so forth, but they have to play the game that they're perplexed, or all their investors, their clients and everything. You
Oh,
know,
they'll
what
think
would they
they're part
do?
of the problem. Well, you got these multi-billion dollar hedge funds like Chris Rocco's that are modestly bullish in the short term, but see rising volatility ahead as the market underestimates the potential for bigger downward moves over the next couple of months. These dour predictions have been piling up for months. In mid-May, billionaire Stan Druckenmiller said, and we talked about this at the time, said the risk-reward calculation for equities was the worst he'd ever seen. We talked about that in terms of not so much a black swan, but certainly a growing consensus at that time that we thought could result in a significant downturn in the equity markets that after the crash or the downturn and that sort of hit its trough at the end of March. But the speed and the arc of the recovery in stocks since then has made the risk of missing out particularly pronounced this year, and that's forced a lot of fund managers out of cash and pushing measures of positioning toward these historically bullish levels. Not just in stocks, mind you, but in gold as well. We'll talk a little bit more about that aspect of what's going on with gold in the third segment. Still, prominent money managers are sounding the alarm. With children learning remotely now this fall again, or more and more looking to be anyway, the impact on working parents could be as disruptive to the labor market as another small to medium recession. We'll talk about that aspect of the economy a little bit later in the program too. Money manager Brevin Howard said investors need to add schools to their usual dashboard of economic indicators. And that's a particularly insightful comment for such a mainstream guy. He said, "What's happening with education has the potential to be as important as any other metric." Go ahead, Melody. I'm sorry. I think you were going to say something.
No, go ahead, finish up.
Well, and lastly, here, there's the race for a vaccine. It's possible that a reliable one could easily take longer to develop and roll out than hoped, or that parts of the population will resist taking it. And I suspect there will be major resistance early on, at least, and with no guarantee until it can be shown to have a significant long-term effect without this, and this is the catch, I think, without any major side effects, particularly to school-aged children. Now, the paper market anyway still expects it to arrive by the end of this year. But production and distribution could come much later than people hope. And people like Brevin think that would be a negative surprise. So there are a lot of headwinds, ladies and gentlemen, against the paper markets, and a lot of tailwinds pushing up gold and silver.
And you know what? I'm going to revisit. Maybe I'll find another country that I can, exchange Venezuela out with.
Aren't many of them, are there?
But hey, their stock market was such a big disconnect from what was going on with the economy. And I believe, we very well could see the same thing here. For a while, maybe this is what we're seeing now. People are perplexed. Investors, managers are perplexed, really. But it was inflation that pushed their market higher, and yet it didn't do the people who owned them any good whatsoever. Didn't help them at all. So you had stock market highs in Venezuela, and they're eating their pets for dinner. So that is a big disconnect. So I think, and we might be experiencing, of course, not to that degree yet, but it can happen, and it could happen here, and it will happen here. And corporate debt, there's no one to pick up the pieces. You have corporate debt, you have the people in debt, you have corporate America. They're more indebted today than ever before. And while much of that fresh cash, more than $1.6 trillion in total, maybe help scores of companies stay afloat during the lockdown, now it's going to threaten an economic recovery, in which this economic recovery is already beginning to show signs of slowing down. So many companies will have to divert even more cash to repaying these obligations at the same time that their profits sink, leaving them with less to spend to expand their payrolls. The over-leveraging of America's corporate sector, it's not about a brand new development, of course. It's been building for more than a decade and longer, ever since the last crisis and the one before that, to when we saw that which prompted the Fed to pump these unprecedented amounts of cash into the economy. But in a sign of just how pronounced the borrowing has become, the average junk-rated company has debt levels relative to earnings that were so high in the middle of the year that they almost would have tripled or tripped. Do not touch alerts from banking regulators just only a few short years ago. Now, these warnings are back, or those warnings back then only applied to a handful of borrowers. It had regulators not opted to drop these warnings, and they could today apply to so many more. We'll finish this up when we come back from the break. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cedarstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cedarstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk TalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. 1-800-375-4188. And we were finishing up the how corporate America is more in debt than ever. I have an article here that I want to share probably next week sometime on CLOs. And again, it's similar to the subprime mortgage loans that were bundled up and you know, shipped off and so forth. Well, now these are corporate loans that they're doing the same thing too. Supposedly, there's three different levels to these corporate loans that is supposed to safeguard from any serious losses. And all the real bad loans, there's like three tiers. The worst part, the worst, the highest risk is the lower tier, and then you go up. And supposedly, this makes everybody much more safe and so forth. But, you know, it's just a bunch of hot air promising people that, you know, there's little risk, great returns. And I don't know, in a world of investment, Dave, where you have great returns with little risk. It doesn't happen.
Yeah, I mean, that's a broker's fantasy. And it's a fantasy unfulfilled, I would mm-hmm. argue. I agree. I don't know. I mean, I guess theoretical, there might be one or two out there, but got to think they're a fluke. And, you know, it'd be interesting to hear that story, wondering how they could be much different than the CMOs that almost brought the country down 13 years ago.
Yeah. So it's just another black swan waiting to rear its... Well, black swans have pretty heads, so to rear its ugly head. But anyway,
maybe it's the bombs they drop on the economy.
maybe. Well, heading into the break, anything you'd like to finish up on that about corporate America and their debt?
Not really. I mean, we know that corporations have been borrowing real heavier than normal. That through July, I believe, they had already, or maybe it was even June, they had already borrowed as much as they did all of last year. A big part of that is, you know, the slashing of interest rates by the Fed to virtually zero in the negatives, if you count include inflation. And, you know, just that's the kind of behavior that kind of policy has spurred, and more of it. More as ever, and has allowed even junk-rated firms to borrow more. That mainly to tide them over while earnings are down during the pandemic. Again, high-grade issuers have already sold more bonds this year than any other full year in history. So we are that's just one of the bubbles we're in right now, Melody, and that is perhaps one of the most serious that we all need to continue to look at.
We know, I know you wanted to talk about this the other day, about how the CEO pay increases far outpaced average, you know, the average workers, and, you know, if these CEO guys, you know, and a lot of them do a good job. I mean, a lot of them, you know, do earn their wages, I think. It's the ones that are going into bankruptcy and get, you know, millions and millions of dollars of bonuses Those are the ones that I have a problem with. And so we have seen the CEO compensation increased 14% from 2018 to an average of $21 million. And, you know, nothing flows down. And, yeah, it is sad that you don't see the employee getting at least something, you know, from their hard work and so forth. But anyway, the increase was thanks to, of course, the rapid growth in vested stock awards and exercise stock options tied to stock market growth. I mean, it's such a rigged market. That's how these wages are tied to. The study uses a measure of pay which counts the value of stock awards when invested or cashed in rather than at the time granted. And the study also incorporated CEO salary amount, bonuses, and a long-term incentive payouts in their calculations. And according to this, analysts, which examined the top 350, or analysis, which examined the top 350 firms in America, top executives are paid an average 320 times as much as a typical worker. But you know what, Dave? It used to be in a time that if you didn't like your wage, you could improve by going to school and you could move on and find a better job that paid better. But we don't live in that world anymore. The typical worker doesn't have that advantage anymore because all of these jobs have fled the nation. So it's hard for a worker to improve. While wage growth for the majority of Americans have remained relatively stagnant for decades, you know, we continue to see it balloon. And it has increased big. And the thing of it is, these big corporations, we talked a little bit about it the other day, these big corporations, hey, they get bailed out by the Fed and by the U.S. government. They don't have anything to worry about. They can do crappy jobs. And if they get in trouble, they get bailed out. So I guess maybe their income and their wages should, you know, I guess maybe it's tied more to lobbyists and making sure they have that relationship. So when we head into recessions, they get bailed out. And they can, you know, anyway, Dave.
Well, what really struck me about this is just what's happened over the long term. I mean, since 1978, CEO pay increased 1,167%. The growth of pay over that same period for the typical worker, 13.7%, while the S&P stock market growth increased 741% over that same 41-year period. Now, this article suggests the increase is due to two major factors. CEOs are getting more because they have the power now to set their own pay.
Just like politicians.
There you go. And because so much of their pay, about three-quarters, is stock-related, not because they're increasing productivity necessarily or possess, you know, these high-demand skills. But because of it, executive pay is expected to continue to increase, even despite the impact of the pandemic. Again, because so much of their pay is tied to the stock market, which is continuing to rise. Still up, what, 5%, the S&P this year so far? Now, there are a couple of potential policy solutions here that people are starting to talk about. Some interesting ones. Some aren't going to like some of them, and I suspect some won't like any of them, particularly you know, if you're into free markets. But you know, they include possibly higher marginal tax rates for these top executives or higher corporate tax rates for firms with larger gaps between CEO and worker average worker compensation. Also includes possibly capping CEO pay and having company shareholders vote on pay. Well, public company shareholders, in almost all cases, vote not on specific pay levels, which might be an improvement, particularly to the extent they're disclosed in annual pre-stockholder meeting disclosures. But boards, I mean, stock shareholders approve essentially the formula for CEO pay. But this is some specifics. Last year, Elon Musk of Tesla, he was the highest paid executive in the U.S. anyway, $595 million. Apple CEO Tim Cook, $134 million. Charter Communications CEO Tom Rutledge, $117 million. And former CBS CEO Joe Ianello with $116 million. Oh, my new favorite dog food distributor, although not as much so after reading this, Sumit Singh, $108 million. Melody, not too chintzy.
No, not at all. And but you know, I don't believe there should be. I don't think there should be. I don't think government should get into writing policy because of their wages. You know, they just need to quit bailing them out. Let these companies fall and let these, you know, let it work the way it's supposed to, and not by, you know, helping them out and so forth. So yeah. I don't know what the answer is. You just got to let them, you know, it would work if they would just let them fail instead of bailing them out. That's the biggest problem. And then maybe you would see some of that funneled down a little bit more. You know, but anyway, sales of existing homes, just doesn't even make sense. You know, you have mortgage apps drop and fall, and then you have, I mean, it just doesn't even make sense. And now you have sales of existing homes soaring 25% in July from June. That's a strong, well, of course, everybody has been pent up, you know, March, April, and May. So, and then by the time it takes 30, 45 days to close, you know, you're up there. So that's the strongest monthly gain in the history of the survey, going back to 1968, and the highest sales pace since December 2006. And we all know what happened after 2006. Sales were 8.7% higher from July of 2019. Supply fell. Prices rose. But we had mortgage rates stay low. So, you know, it's kind of interesting that the supply of existing homes plummeted 21% annually, and just 1.5 million homes for sale at the end of July, and yada, 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 Dave. So, just doesn't even make sense, but...
Yeah, go figure.
Go figure. Yeah, maybe I'll go get my real estate license and see if I can figure But anyway, you know what? We have about 5 minutes left of the program, and there's some of these. I don't know if you would like to keep the levity as golden until we get to the third break.
Sure, go for it.
And let's talk about, you know, this morning there was a lot of talk about the airline industry, how they were beginning to see, you know, a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel. The peak leisure travel season is about to come to an end. And without conferences or events to woo business travels this fall, the industry's modest recovery over the past several weeks could quickly lose altitude. You have paper investors. They've been snapping up the airlines as bargain stocks lately, encouraged by reports of a potential progress toward a vaccine. The reopening trade has been popular since the start of August. You have the hotels like Marriott and Hyatt, each gaining about 12%. Airline stocks represented by the Jets ETF, that's up by 9%. MGM, that was up. So investors just seem to be betting that furloughs and other deep cost cuts and Maybe another round of federal aid might just put airlines in decent shape for financial recovery. I think it was Delta. They came out this morning and said that they weren't going to fill their third seat until the first of 2021. That they're only flying about 50, maybe 60% of their usual. So it's not all good news. It's certainly better than what it was, though, Dave.
Yeah, well, what piqued my interest here was the short sellers out there, you know, the investors who bet that company stocks are overpriced and who profit when the prices fall. Are lining up to bet against the airlines now with 95 million of new short sales over just the last week. According to the trade group Airlines for America, airline shorts are up $3.1 billion for the year. As of last week, domestic passenger volumes are still down 70% from a year ago. International travel even more, down 88%. The average domestic flight is 47% full. I'm surprised it's that high, versus 88% last year. And TSA checkpoints, 717,000 people per day this year versus 95 in mid-April and more than 2 million in January. Almost all those who are flying right now are leisure travelers. Business, which typically accounts for one-third of flying passengers, is showing no signs of recovery at all right now. Cargo, on the other hand, a bright spot. Airlines flying more freight to help make up for the lost passenger revenue. And I saw earlier this week more pets flying these days as well. So, hey, I guess you got to make a buck somehow, right, Melody?
Yeah, I guess you do.
Delta CEO Ed Bastian said, I think it's probably 2 or 3 years before the industry's recovery comes back. So,
well, you know, this is a sad. I think everybody's heard about this, about the thousands of baby chicks that are dying during shipping.
How about that?
It's got to be one of the weirdest turn of supply chain events that we've heard of. Thousands. Yeah. Thousands of baby chicks. And, of course, the farmers are blaming it on the U.S. mail. You do have farmers who receive shipments of chicks in the mail to supply their operations. This one farmer, he said in his last two shipments, 500 of the chicks arrived dead, which is about a fifth of his stock each time. He says in more than 6 years of farming, he can't remember losing more than 25 in a shipment before. And it's, you know, that's terrible. Our post farmers can do better than that.
Yeah, farmers, don't let your children open up these packages.
Why?
Oh, they'll see all these dead chickies.
Oh, well, they'll get them out. But I also was reading an article.
Over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today. today, complete with two Black Berkey Elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And one more time before we head into a weekend, welcome back to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen, sitting in for Melody this third segment as she concludes some business in the office before the weekend is upon us. A couple weeks ago, we learned of a couple of executive orders by the president. One of them was about a payroll tax holiday. And it turns out that employers and payroll numbers have less than 2 weeks to put the president's payroll tax deferral in place. And it looks to be looking like an uphill battle. Again, the president signed this executive order 2 weeks ago calling for a deferral of the employee portion of the payroll tax from September 1st through the end of the year. Currently, both employers and employees share responsibility for a payroll tax of 7.65 each, 12.4 of that to fund Social Security, and 2.9% to support Medicare. Social Security taxes are subject to an annual adjusted wage cap up to $137,700 this year. Medicare taxes are assessed beyond that threshold. The executive order applies specifically to the Social Security tax, the 6.2%, and would affect workers who biweekly pay is less than $4,000 on a pre-tax basis. Now, employers and payroll companies are still awaiting final guidance from the IRS on how this is supposed to work. Ain't much time after they get it out and employers get it to try and make it kick in just about Labor Day. Pete Iceberg, who is Vice President for Government Relations at ADP, the payroll provider, said it's looking less likely they'll be ready in time. He said it'll be hard for employers to do something about it. And to that effect, the National Payroll Reporting Consortium said even if guidance were available today, the programming changes are substantial in scope. Now, to meet the guidance, payroll companies would have to recalculate the payroll tax in the middle of a quarter and have it apply to some employers and some workers, but not others. The consortium said not all employers and payroll systems will be able to make these complex changes by September 1st. Now, while Trump handed down the deferral through his executive order, there's no guarantee that the employee share of the payroll tax will actually be forgiven. And that's created uncertainty among payroll providers and employers. For starters, employers are generally responsible for withholding and depositing the payroll tax. I think that's on, Form 941. I think that's filed quarterly. If the employer doesn't withhold employees' share of taxes and the IRS can't collect them, then the worker presumably will be on the hook for the deferred tax. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce said, now, if this were a suspension of the payroll tax so that employees weren't forced to pay it back later, implementation would be less challenging. But it ain't the case. So be on the lookout. If you haven't heard from your employer about this, probably would behoove you to do so there aren't any surprises come Labor Day. Now, as I mentioned in the first segment, millions of children around the country are starting school from the comfort of their homes rather than in their classroom. And that reality has many, many parents considering dramatic measures to ensure they can support their children at home this fall. About 22% of parents are considering reducing their work hours if their children have to stay at home at least part of the time. That's according to a recent poll. Another 9% say they'll be forced to quit their jobs. Hillary Berger, who is a career counselor and the founder of Work Like a Mother, said the stress that parents are facing right now is really unimaginable and unprecedented. And of course, that's particularly true of mothers. Already, data from the Census Bureau show that millennial mothers are three times as likely as fathers to be unemployed in July, anyway, because they are unable to access child care. And some parents may not have a lot of options. For those who are contemplating stepping away from their jobs to take care of their children this fall, it's going to help them a lot to be prepared. Now, our latest blog, which will be out soon after today's program, is about being vigilant with your gold and silver in the midst of increasing volatility. Listeners can subscribe to our free weekly blogs and our American Survival newsletters at dgscoins.com. Or you can read them on our Facebook page at dgscoins, the @ dgscoins. Precious metals experts Peter Hug lays the blame of this past Wednesday's gold and silver correction on, quote, lots of long positions that needed lightening ahead of the Fed's July meeting minutes. They were just making sure that if the Fed said something different, they'd be able to take some money off the table. And he says he thinks that's what caused all the selling. It was certainly nothing about gold and silver's fundamentals, which remain particularly strong as both metals continue to hover not far off their 2020 highs. By now you know that gold fell $66, or 3.3%, from its intraday high of 1993 to its low of 1927 on Wednesday, and silver fell by $1.43, or 5.1%, from its intraday high of $27.96 and a low of $26.53. Now, since Thursday, gold has been fairly consistent, except for a slip to 1921 yesterday, before moving upward again this afternoon. And silver has been more up and down since yesterday, falling to 2640 this morning, again before turning around. Gold prices are off their session lows today, but still remain under pressure as sentiment in the manufacturing and service sectors has improved more than expected. Today, IHS Market said its flash U.S. Manufacturing Purchasing Managers Index for August rose to a reading of 53.6. That's up from July's reading of 50.9. The data were better than expected. Economists were looking to see a reading of 51.9. The report also said that sentiment in the U.S. manufacturing sector is at its highest level in 19 months. At the same time, the firm's service sector PMI reading rose to 54.8, and that's up from July's reading of 50. Economists were forecasting this index to come in at 50.9. Sentiment in the service sector is at its highest level in 17 months. Now, initially, gold investors reacted to the latest economic data with really a yawn. By mid-afternoon, December gold futures were down just ever so slightly at $1,945 an ounce, down less than 0.5% on the day. HIS market economist C.N. Jones said that August data pointed to a further improvement in business conditions across the private sector as client demand picked up among both manufacturers and service providers. Notably, Jones said, the renewed increase in sales among service sector firms was welcome news following 5 months of steady declines. Now, note this, ladies and gentlemen, the markets will hear more from central bankers next week during the Fed's annual Jackson Hole Symposium, which is being held virtually this year, I believe, for the first time. This year's event is called Navigating the Decade Ahead: Implications for Monetary Policy. Hey, at least they're looking ahead, looking at the long term, right? Looking beyond the ends of their noses. Fed Chair Jerome Powell is scheduled to speak on Thursday morning, 9:10 a.m. Eastern Time. And as we know, like it or not, whenever Powell speaks, like E.F. Hutton, people listen, which means there's likely significant volatility in the precious metals and paper markets toward the end of next week. We'll be keeping our eyes glued to the scene and let you know what's going on. Now, what we're looking for is whether Powell lays out any worries, particularly about the economy, 3 months from now. Peter Hug, again of Kitco, said that if Powell shows any sign of concern that will create significant volatility, then watch out. When you have an event like that, he continued, a lot of people tend to reduce their positions, whether long or short. RBC Wealth Management Managing Director George Giro said that gold's wild ride will continue next week, agreeing that Powell's speech will be one of the most significant events to watch. People are going to hold back on trading until they can digest the Fed's message, Giro said. Pepperstone's Chris Weston added, markets will be carefully watching any communication regarding the Fed's monetary policy review. And so will we, ladies and gentlemen. So will we. In the meantime, gold silver investors should hang tough, but continue to be vigilant. There are a lot more traditional paper investors buying and selling precious metal these days, particularly in ETFs, which have a lot more turnover and thus a lot more day-to-day volatility and price fluctuation to watch out for. If you have physical gold, as most of our listeners do, hold on. This week's downturn, which started to turn around this afternoon, should continue at least into the end of next week in the Jackson Hole Symposium. Now, let's see. Where do we go from here? How about overseas? Secretary of State Mike Pompeo asserted today that the U.S. would enforce sweeping sanctions on Iran, even though the UN Security Council voted to not extend an arms embargo on the rogue regime. Pompeo addressed the 15-member nations of the Security Council yesterday and reiterated that the Trump administration will continue its maximum pressure campaign in order to rein in Tehran's missile and nuclear weapons programs. Pompeo said, "I haven't had a single world leader or one of my counterparts tell me that they think it makes any sense at all for the Iranians to be able to purchase and sell high-end weapon systems." And that's what will happen on October 18th this year, absent the actions that we took at the UN yesterday. He continued, "We're not going to let them have a nuclear weapon. We're not going to let them have hundreds of billions of dollars in wealth from selling weapon systems. Every leader around the world knows that's a bad idea." Trump administration previously pushed members of the Security Council to extend a UN-imposed arms embargo. The embargo on Iran is currently set to end, as I said, in October, under the 2015 nuclear deal. And last week is when the Security Council voted not to extend the arms embargo on Iran. 30 days after Pompeo's notification, a range of UN sanctions will be restored, including the requirement that Iran suspends all enrichment-related activities. This so-called snapback will also extend a 13-year arms embargo on Iran. Tensions between Washington and Tehran have risen following Trump's withdrawal from the landmark nuclear agreement in 2018, where he called it the worst deal ever. 2015 agreement, as you recall, lifted sanctions on Iran that crippled its economy and cut its oil exports roughly in half. In exchange for sanctions relief, Iran accepted limits on its nuclear program until the terms expire in 2025. Now, as we wind down to the end of today's program, I guess this was only a matter of time, ladies and gentlemen, this coming after the historic announcement rolled out earlier this week about the between the UAE and Israel. Gaza militants fired rockets toward Israel, which responded with airstrikes overnight. That, according to the Israeli military, this is being seen as the most serious escalation of cross-border violence in months, prompting mediators to step up de-escalation efforts. There were no injuries of a fire in an area where Palestinians have been causing blazes by flying balloons loaded with flammable materials on the Israeli side of the border between Israel and the Gaza Strip. The Palestinian spokesperson said, "Calm can only come if Israel demands, agrees to demands presented by Hamas and other factions." Today, Israeli Defense Minister Benny Gantz responded that the Israeli military will attack the attackers in turn, inflicting serious damage. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, we'll call it a day and a week. On behalf of Melody Cedarstrom, I'm Dave Allen. Thank you so much for tuning in. We appreciate your ears and your support, and hope you'll have a great weekend. Please tune in to us on Monday. Be safe out there. Have a great weekend. Bye-bye. In my dreams, I have a plan. If I got me a wealthy man.